Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Killer Cast. All right, everybody, so today I am alone again, and I apologize for my voice if it's kind of bad. I've been congested or something. I don't really know what to call it, but my voice has been sounding extra deep and manly, so I apologize for that. But today I'm going to be talking about another semi-local story to where I'm from, and it's important for me to tell these local stories because the area I live in actually has a lot of interesting places, and I just see them being overlooked a lot. And plus, a lot of my listeners are from my area, so I think it's cool to talk about stuff that they've heard about or maybe heard about when they were kids, and just give some history and all that. For those of you who aren't from my area, I hope I can teach you something new, and maybe you'll like it, maybe you'll be more interested, can look at more things around my area. But today, our episode is going to be about the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum. That's also known as the Weston State Hospital or the West Virginia Hospital for the Insane. I am so excited to talk about this place because I remember being told stories about it as a kid, and stories about how the patients were treated, the overcrowding, how the building started, like the vision for it compared to what it ended up. But most of all, I feel like what most of us have heard around here is about how haunted it is. I got a lot of my info today from their own website, so we're going to be hearing it straight from the source. And I have a couple little experiences I want to talk about at the end, like Ghost Adventures went there, and there was a couple reporters who have gone in there and done research and stuff. So we can talk about all that once we get to the end of all this history. And yeah. So let's get into it. So the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum was built between 1858 and 1881. Now I think that is just how long it was under construction, because it opened before 1981. It opened before 1881. So I think it was just still under construction, and that's whenever it completed. It was supposed to be this great thing to help people who were mentally ill in a new way that hadn't been done, and the goal was to be more humane, because at this time, lots of people just thought mental illness meant you were possessed, and the struggles of mental illness weren't talked about enough, and people didn't realize that you should be treating these things with stuff like medicine and therapy instead of exorcisms and stuff like that. But what was meant to be this great building that was supposed to help people actually ended in disaster. So, let's talk a little bit about some of the history and about how how things were before the asylum came around and before things changed. So, back in the 1700s, people who were considered insane were treated worse than animals. They would often be abandoned by their families. They wouldn't have anyone, and they would have just terrible conditions, terrible living conditions, terrible treatment. They would be chained up, they'd be stripped of all their clothing, regardless of how hot or cold it was. They'd be filthy, covered in, just complete nastiness, malnourished, often left alone with, real criminals who did real terrible things, and, just foul, honestly foul conditions for anybody to live in. Some people did have families that would keep them there and with them and kind of quote unquote care for them, but oftentimes they still would hide them away from society, even keeping them in places like attics, sheds, and sometimes even holes in the ground. People were ashamed to have these people in their families, so they were mistreated, and that was how it was. But then places started to be built to house these, quote, insane people in the 1770s. However, these places were still made to keep these people away from society, and instead of using therapy and medicine to rehabilitate them, they were just kind of locking them away and keeping them quiet and away from society, whereas we should be trying to rehabilitate them and get them to be functioning members of society, or at least being able to regulate them enough to where, you know, it's manageable. So when the 1800s rolled around, things started to change. People like Thomas Kirkbride and Dorothea Dix had new ideas for how they would treat the insane. Now, today, their methods would still seem inhumane, but them working on treating these people definitely helped pave the way to the more humane methods that we use today and the better understanding that we have of mental illness in its broad scale. So Thomas Kirkbride wanted to create an environment in which these people could be cured of their, quote, insanity. He was really big on the idea that sunlight and fresh air were crucial. And honestly, like, I agree with that. Like, as somebody who suffers from depression, I will say that, you know, you get a breath of fresh air and you walk out in the sun and you start to feel a little bit better most times. I mean, obviously, I'm not saying, you know, it just cure your depression by walking out into the sun, but it does help. It makes you feel a little bit better. It's hard to feel depressed whenever you're in an environment like that. So in the 1850s, the Trans-Allegheny Lunatic Asylum began being built in Kirkbride's image. There were long halls with 12-foot ceilings and lots of windows and ventilation. It is supposedly the largest hand-cut stone masonry building in North America, and apparently the second largest in the world. Stonemasons were actually brought in from Germany and Ireland to build it. So Kirkbride actually, he also had this idea that mental patients would be able to walk around and roam freely about these buildings because they would heal quicker if they felt as though they had some control over their own lives. Now, I mean, I think that that's not, like, the worst idea ever, you know? I think that was, like, a good thought. It's not obviously a universal thing for everybody. Like, not everybody is gonna just be like, wow, I'm cured because I was able to roam around freely, but I mean, it's definitely a more humane way to treat them. I just don't think it's like a cure-all, you know what I mean? So, but, you know, it was the thought, you know. So, on the grounds of the Trans-Allegheny Asylum, there was a farm, a gas well, water systems, dairy, a cemetery. Like, they had it all. They basically wanted to keep themselves self-sufficient and wanted to make it so that, like, everything that they needed for these patients was right there for them. There were actually 73 hospitals built across America that were, like, they called them Kirkbride hospitals. Like, they were built like how he would have wanted them. So in 1863, the asylum finally opened and was made to house 250 patients comfortably in their own rooms. In 1881, the diagnosis for mental illness skyrocketed and the hospital was packed with nearly 500 more patients than were supposed to be there. At this point, no one could keep up anymore, and the resources on the land to make it a self-sustaining facility were starting to run out because they were only made to care for up to 300 people. And at this point, it was way more than that. Like, the sheer number of people there was too much. They were becoming malnourished, and it was planned to be one person to a room, but it began to become 4 to 5 people to a room. And of course, these conditions were not helping the mental health of these patients, and this is supposed to be a place that's making it better. So by 1938, the hospital had gone over 6 times capacity. Sorry. The patients would run wild, and it was impossible for the staff to tame anyone. It was a dangerous environment with sickly patients who extremely outnumbered the workers, and the hospital hit its peak number of patients in the 1950s when it had 10 times, actually over 10 times, the amount of patients that it should have had at 2,600. Like, that is insane. A building that's supposed to house 250 people. Like, just put that into perspective of your house. Like obviously, this building's a lot bigger than your house, but just think about, like, how many people could fit comfortably in your home and then multiply that by over 10, like, times that amount. That is fucking insane. Like, nobody should be living like that. So word started to get around about the extreme and horrible conditions in this asylum, and so the Charleston Gazette sent a crew in to investigate. When they got there, they witnessed patients sleeping on the floor because there weren't nearly enough beds to house everyone. They found that the rooms were cold and there wasn't enough heat to keep people warm. The place was filthy, the windows were covered in just like nastiness, the floors were gross, the wallpaper was peeled off the walls, some from like just decay and how disgusting it was, and others from the patients who were like in a state of panic, which can you blame them? Like, it's a fucking madhouse. And some patients were even kept in random cages throughout the facility to make room for the less problematic patients. And, like, it just blows my mind. Like, it was just a bad place to be, man. So during its time open, the asylum had also become a place where experimental lobotomies were being done, specifically by Dr. Walter Freeman, who was a surgeon famous for supporting lobotomies. In his lifetime, he performed around 4,000 lobotomies on people. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, Skylar, were these harmless little procedures where no one got hurt? Well, random listener, I'm here to tell you that they were not innocent, harmless little procedures where no one got hurt. I'm here to tell you that they were actually fucking pretty horrible. And the guy, the doctor, Dr. Freeman, he was known for doing ice pick lobotomies, which, if you don't know what that is, brace yourself because it's pretty gross and it's probably going to give you a headache just hearing about it. So fair warning. An ice pick lobotomy is where you take a rod and you shove it into a patient's eye socket. Then you use a hammer to hammer it in and sever the tissue in the prefrontal cortex of the patient's brain. So even if you don't know what any of that means, I'm sure that I had you at the part where I said you shove a rod into somebody's fucking eye socket. Like, what the fuck? Like, that is crazy. I would kill somebody if they did that to me. I'm just saying. Like, oh my God. So this would often result in people being left physically and cognitively damaged, and a lot of times it would result in death. Like, people's bodies just couldn't handle it. So by the time the asylum closed in 1994, they had to expand their cemetery because of all the people who had died there. That is insane. The building is still there and is still filled with old medical equipment in the rooms and the hallways. You can take the trips there now because in 2007, tours were made available for people who wanted to see it. They have historical tours and then they have haunted tours. And like the haunted tours, you can either have a private one or you can go just like whenever another group goes. And there's two separate tours. There's one for the main building and then there's one for like a bunch of like the medical buildings and stuff like that. So it's like a whole overnight tour. Those are like the ghost tours. And then there's the historical tours, which I think there might be an overnight one. I'm not positive. Don't quote me on that. But from what I could tell, it seems like they kind of start every hour on the hour. And there's like a longer version where you can tour all four floors. And then there's a shorter version where, you know, you just do like a smaller tour. And I think the four floor one is like a 90 minute tour and the other one is like 30 or 60. But yeah, you can go on tours there now. You can do the overnight stays. A lot of people who go there say that they can feel the souls of the people who died there. I know a couple people who have gone. They say it's like super creepy, but I think I would like to do it. Like, I would want to stay overnight there at some point and just like experience that for myself. Maybe I could do like get a couple people to go with me and do like a bonus episode or something. Maybe like post an update, see what happens to me. Maybe I'll record it and post it on the TikTok. I don't know. But it seems like it would be fun, you know. Yeah, I'd think about it. Maybe. Okay, so like I said before, there was an episode of Ghost Adventures where they went and went into the asylum and, you know, did their Ghost Adventures thing. So I do want to list off some of the things that happened in the episode while they were there. I'm actually taking this from the Ghost Adventures wiki, like, so, I mean, I don't know if any of this stuff was fabricated or anything. I'm not going to accuse anybody of that, but it is a TV show, so I'm just going to let you guys know what happened, but don't quote me on it. So they have it kind of like listed as like all the evidence. And like I said, this is from the Ghost Adventures fandom wiki. It like tells you about the episodes. So apparently on EVP, they had got the words harm, never, who are you, a loud female scream, fuck you, moaning, banging, get out, door slamming, why don't you leave, a loud beep, it worked, I did, walk, hey there, Zach, I don't want it, you wanna fight me, knocking, a loud female groan, be quiet, no, we did, 8, like the number 8, Nick, I hate Zach, Zach and Nick get out, grunting, go, get out, fuck again, breathing, get up, and I'm okay. There were residual noises such as screaming, moaning, banging, door slamming, loud beeping, knocking, groaning, grunting, breathing, disembodied speaking, like a little girl's voice, a male voice. There was a conversation. Apparently, Zach photographed at least 2 large misty orbs on his digital camera, one near and behind Nick. It says there was a moving object. Robert Bess's EMF detector got thrown 50 feet, but in the postmortem, it was debunked. EMF fluctuation. Fluctuation. I can't talk today. EMF fluctuation. Zach asked the spirit to touch his hand, and when that happened, the EMF detector spiked over 10 times. Zach and Chris also felt a cold breeze, and Chris's EMF detector gets a reading of EMF fields. As far as visual sightings, Zach and Chris claim to have seen an apparition on the first floor moving to the left 3 times and a flicker of light opposite of it. They also had some spirit box voices. I'm going to warn you, some of these that I'm about to read are, you know, I would say there's a trigger warning for them for like sexual assault and some violence and some like sexual words. So I'm going to warn you before I read them. But the spirit box voices said, who are you? No. Hello. No way. I don't want it. I don't want to be raped. What are you doing? Yes, they were. I can. 16. I heard you. Just 1. Sorry. 7. In room. Hello. Just 8. Mommy. No. Yes. No. Who's this? Only you. You bet. I talk. All of us. I don't know. Fuck you. You suck dick. Harm. I am. Thank you. Help me. Nobody. No idea. Nothing. I don't have to. You got it. Never. So yeah, that was like a wild ride. I know that doesn't like tell you much, but it just shows you like there's a lot of words that were heard at this place. As far as physical harm, Mark was getting neck pains. Physical contact, Zach felt something running towards him. Visual sightings, Zach, Debbie, and Aaron see a shadow running back and forth on the wall in the 4th floor. Another physical contact, a fan's hair gets brushed and her jacket tugged in the seclusion cells. Physical harm, Aaron gets a pain that is similar to the surgery the doctor did. Apparition, 4 orbs are seen on webcam 4. This was the Civil War wing before the pharmacy. Visual sighting, Debbie claims to have seen a figure peek its head out of a door. The Parabot detects a large energy field near it. Equipment malfunction, the Parabot was set up the night before and now has scratches and broken glass with a spirit controlling the Tesla coil. An orb is captured on webcam 3 in the medical center hallway. Robert Bess is thrown into a door by an unseen entity, and Zach took a picture while it happened and caught an orb. Zach feels something grab his arm. Nick saw a mist form by Robert Bess before his EMF detector was unknowingly thrown. Robert Bess claims to have seen a shadow at the end of the hallway. Nick and Aaron see an orb float by Zach's head, and Zach captures a picture of an orb shaped like a skull. So a lot of shit happened there whenever they were doing their episode. And like I said, I'm not claiming to have written any of that. That was straight from the Ghost Adventures fandom website. I couldn't find a place to watch the actual episode, so I had to read like a little summary of it. So I figured I'd just say I directly got it from that source, because I don't, you know, I can't speak on it. I haven't seen the episode. But yeah, that is what I have for this week's episode. It definitely is an interesting one to me. Definitely something that I remember hearing stories about whenever I was a kid, and like how haunted it was. And you know, you hear things about, like, you know, there was somebody reported there was a ghost of two teenage boys in a bathroom and they wanted cigarettes as a gift. There's stories about people who go in with flashlights and they set this flashlight in a room, ask the spirit to turn it on, they turn it on. And then they ask them to turn it off. They turn it back off. Sometimes they want cigarettes to do that. There are rumors of a guy named Jim James who likes cigarettes. He's apparently a spirit in the hospital. A little girl named Lily who plays in this like corridor where they kept violent women. It was also like a lobotomy recovery place. Yeah, there's like tons and tons of ghost stories. Like, I really want to go there and like do a podcast or even like a video episode, maybe I could put on YouTube or something, of like me staying there, maybe with a couple friends, and just like seeing what happens. I think it could be really fun. But yeah, that is all I have for this week. I know it's kind of a shorter episode, but I kind of want to keep the theme going of like, 1 week doing true crime, the next week doing paranormal, because I want to kind of keep it, you know, 50-50. And sometimes the paranormal episodes can be a little bit shorter because obviously it's not like all backed up based on fact. It's kind of just like stuff that's been said. It's paranormal. So, but anyway, next week I'm going to have a guest on. I'm super excited. It's a guest that we haven't had before, but he's a really good friend of mine. I'm super, super, super excited to have him on. He's like a fan of like all things spooky, and he likes true crime, and yeah, he's just a really cool dude. You guys are gonna love him. So stay tuned for next Wednesday, because he will be here. And yeah, that's all. See you guys next week. Bye.